Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for taking time to be with us tonight. I have a really special pair of people on my show tonight, and they mean more to me than they probably even know. And I'm going to, before I even tell you, several years ago I had a heart attack, and one day I went to the doctor, and after 6 months, and I asked the doctor to, he did a sonogram on me, or stress test, and before I left, they said, well, you might need to go in the hospital. Your ventricle wall is not moving. Well, I walked in that hospital that day feeling like $1 million, and I walked out like a broken woman, sobbing and frightened. And I get home, and my telephone rings, and it was Dr. Steve Sinatra. And he said, and I'm sobbing, and he goes, what's the matter? And I told him, and he said, Eva, don't worry about their tests. I'm afraid I'm going to cry now. But he said, don't worry about their test. How do you feel on the inside? How does your mind feel? How does your soul feel, Eva? You don't worry about those doctor's numbers. And I listened to him that day. And 3.5 years later, I'm doing fabulous, all because I listened to Steve Sinatra tell me that heart and mind was what mattered, not what those numbers meant. So today, Steve Sinatra and Tommy Rosa together have written a brand new book, and I just found out today that we get it number one tonight. We get to introduce this book to the world, and I'm so honored and so thrilled to have these two men on my show. Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth, Tommy Rosa and his near-death experience and what he learned, how heaven helps you live in physical reality. And Steve Sinatra, Dr. Steve Sinatra, how you can use your soul to live healthily in physical reality. Thank you guys for coming on my show. Welcome, Tommy Rosa and Dr. Steve Sinatra.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Eva. And, you know, it's amazing that you mentioned that about, you know, you were crying and they had just called and stuff like that. And I mean, it's that's the way God works, right, Tommy?
He works in mysterious ways. We have no idea how he works.
I mean, it was Tommy's situation. Remember, Tommy, you would go in a cardiologist. They said you needed a heart transplant. You should probably tell that story. It's amazing, the way God puts people in their path when you need them.
Before you guys get started, both of you take a second and just tell us a little bit about you for new listeners and where they can find you. Where they can find your brand new book, Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth, and your web pages, so they can go look you up while you're talking.
Go ahead, Tommy. You're the lead author here.
Oh, but you have all the websites. I'm just
go ahead, bummer. Tommy. You're different. You go first.
Well, the book is on Amazon and Barnes and Noble, and it should be in some Barnes and Noble stores too. Is Book a Million? And other big stores that have online presence. So you can look it up there. I think Amazon has the best price for it. And it gets delivered on Tuesday. It comes out Tuesday, the first day. So we're all excited about that. So let me tell you about myself. I was a plumbing contractor in New York City for most of my life. And one day I was going to get a loaf of bread, and I got ran over by a car going 40 miles an hour. And then I died. I was just 40 years old and I died. And then I had this perfect trip that took me into this beautiful tunnel of light and right into heaven. And as I get there, I only see beautiful white light with pink and blue and all types of energy around me and making me feel soft, light, and loved. And you can feel the vibration of heaven going through this tunnel. And not knowing if I was dead or alive, I just went for the ride. And the ride was beautiful. And the book, the way we wrote the book is that we try to make you go on the ride with us, going through the tunnel, feeling the energy, smelling what it smells like, and how you feel. so you can get into the light experience. And I am really blessed because I was probably going the wrong direction in life, working hard and not seeing all of what the real life's about family, love, and not about working hard and run constantly. So God put me in a different direction. And this direction was going to have this experience. And as life goes on, we see all the connections in our lives, how it's put together. Like the reason I was ran over, I believe now, is so I can get this story out so everyone can feel what it is supposed to be. Because everything in the world is energy in the universe. And we vibrate differently. And what I learned in heaven is that we vibrate on how we think, act, and eat, and what we say to people. So we have in the book a discussion about how it raises your vibration and makes you healthy and happy. And Dr. Sinatra gives you the earthly ways to do it. So, Steve, tell the earthly ways what you can do.
I'm
raising your vibration.
I mean, well said, Tommy. Well, Eva, I've been on your show a few times, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we've done
four
different
or five,
books.
I think.
I mean, what did we do in the past? Great Cholesterol Myth or Metabolic Cardiology? We've done a few things together. But nothing, you know, I mean, it's just amazing. I'm so blessed to have met Tommy. I mean, I've done 20 books before. And, I mean, my websites are heartmdinstitute.com and drsinatra.com. Dr. Sinatra pays the bills, and HeartMD Institute is a pure informational, non-commercial website. But it's just amazing that God puts people in your path, and accidents don't happen. And after meeting Tommy, I realized that Tommy was placed in my path for a reason, and I was placed in his path for a reason. But it's not just at this point in my life, in the last 5 years, after meeting Tommy and spending 5 years with our spouses writing this book, I come to realize that my whole life has been divinely guided. And I didn't get that until the last, you know, year in this whole process. I started thinking about it 5 years ago because I was connecting the dots, and I said, oh, this is possible, this is plausible. But I really didn't get it until the last year, and I realized that we all have a divine plan. And I can go back to even high school and my mother's sickness and then medical school and the Vietnam War and all the things that shaped my life. I mean, I have to tell you that meeting Tommy was a real gift for me. It sort of explained a lot of the mysteries and it helped me really, you know, think about, you know, the divine and how it enters our life every day. And so I'm thrilled to be a part of this book. And I must tell you that I think writing 20 books and becoming a psychotherapist and, you know, being a medical doctor has really prepared me for this book, because this book is a divine book. It's a spiritual book. This is a book about unseen forces, which are so much more powerful than what we can see. It's the unseen that helps, you know, direct our unconscious drives, our personalities, etc. So, I mean, for me, I just feel blessed that I was placed in Tommy's path and he was placed in mine.
I'd like to ask you guys this. I know from interviewing hundreds of people on the topic of consciousness that typically, synchronicities happen in threes. And when it's time to wake up, there's usually been some things that happen before you have that getting ran over by the car or having whatever thing flipped your switch to let you know that there was something else other than that materialistic world. And before we go into all the book, I'd like to know, Tommy, did you see those things? Did you?
Yes, I did.
Were there three? Can you see
you
a pattern?
Hit it right on the head.
What?
There was
tell
three.
Me about it.
The first
tell
one
us.
Was this. This is really interesting. And I know later on after my accident that there was no accident, all these things happened. So I'm driving the car one day in New York City. I get pulled over by a policeman, and he says, your license is suspended. I said, what do you mean suspended? I just got it 2 months ago. He said, you haven't paid a ticket from 10 years ago. I said, really? I just got a new license. He says, well, I have to lock you up. And he puts me in jail. I stay in jail for 48 hours, so I get bailed out. Since I had no criminal record, they had to check all these different places to make sure I wasn't wanted. And I get out, and I go to court, and they say, oh, it was a mistake. The computer threw out a ticket that wasn't even there. So in my mind, it says, there's a reason this happened. I was moving too fast, maybe, in life, and God was trying to slow me down. Then what happens is, before the accident, my car gets smashed in a parking spot about 2 weeks before the accident. And that is another thing that happened before the accident. And then 2 weeks later, I get ran over. So there was three things that happened before. And I think he was trying to slow me down and go into a different direction in my life, and I wasn't listening. So if you don't listen, then you get knocked down.
Like a baseball bat. So what about you, Steve? Something brought you to Tommy on that exact moment. Can you look back and see it coming? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it all makes sense. I mean, it goes back to what I said before, how when I became a doctor in 1972, when I graduated medical school, I only believed that illness was a physical situation. And when I was a fourth-year medical student, I took a two-week rotation on psychiatry, and I was on the psychiatry wards, and I was overwhelmed with mental illness. And I said to myself, boy, I never want to be a psychiatrist, I said. I mean, this is something that I'm so glad that I didn't even, go into. But God had another plan for me, Eva, and I don't even know if Tommy knows this story. When it came time for my internship, I wanted to go to a big city hospital like Bellevue or San Francisco General or Grady Memorial. So I only applied for six internships at the big city hospitals in America. And guess what happened? I didn't match. So now I'm left out in the cold. I don't have an internship to go to. But the Albany Medical Center Hospital, where I went to medical school, they didn't match their psychiatry program. So I went for their psychiatry residency because they didn't have psychiatry internships. So they said to me, well, you've been a good student at Albany. We'll give you if you take 4 months of psychiatry residency and the other eight months of internal medicine, that will count for a year of internal medicine because psychiatry is very close to medicine. So here I am without an internship, and I get to be a psychiatric resident. And I got to tell you, Tommy and Eva, it was a baptism by fire. I mean, it was the scariest thing I've ever gone through in my life. Here I was, the resident on call every fourth night in the city of Albany, the psychiatry resident on call. And I was reading a book every two or three days. I mean, I remember reading R.D. Lang's Divided Self. I remember reading books on psychotropic drugs and Haldol and Thorazine and all that stuff. And the most incredible stories and the hardest people to treat, manic depressive, schizophrenics. And I was thrown, it was a baptism by fire. And I did it. And I had backup, but I was alone lots of nights, dealing with people with mental illness, suicides and stuff like that. But it really shaped me because as a result of that psychiatric experience, when I went into medicine and then did 2 years of medical residency and I wanted to become a cardiologist, I realized that cardiology was really an illness from the neck up. In other words, having a heart attack or heart disease is a physical condition, but it's the mental, emotional stuff that really gets in the way. And it's much more powerful in causing heart disease than, let's say, high cholesterol and physical matters. So I realized that emotionality was even more important than the physical aspects, because it was the emotional aspects that overwhelmed the physical in causing heart disease. So basically, I ended up going into a psychiatric, or not a psychiatric program. I became a psychotherapist. I studied 2 years in Gestalt psychotherapy. Then I did another 10 years of bioenergetic psychotherapy. And so now I'm dealing with the mind. I've been dealing with physical stuff all through medical school, all through my internship, residencies, fellowship, and the first, you know, 10 years of my practice. And then now I'm in the emotional. And then when I'm in the emotional and I'm an invasive cardiologist, I'm saving people's lives in the intensive care units and the ICUs, and I'm the cardiac cath lab, and I'm going from one emergency to the next. And now I'm hearing stories from people about going to the other side and coming back. And I didn't know what to do with it because nobody was talking about it in the 70s, 80s, and 90s until Ray Moody's book came out, Life After Life. And basically, I was so confused on what to do, and people told me after I was resuscitating them, they would say, "I saw you trying to save me. I was on the ceiling watching you, and I was rooting for you." Then others would say that I went to a place and I came back, just like Tommy. I heard the white light experience many times. And now I'm saying to myself, "Well, why am I hearing this?" And I realized that I needed to go into the spiritual aspects of heart disease. So I attended more conferences on spirituality and consciousness. And because when we die, our consciousness goes on. We never lose our consciousness. It just goes into a different energetic form.
Let me ask you a question right here, okay? There's, what is consciousness to you? What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that we have a physical body, an emotional body, and a spiritual body. And when we get sick, it's really an imbalance of all those forces, the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. And when we die, you know, we're in this cylinder that we call our body. And even though the physical body dies, and the emotional body dies, the spirit moves on. So consciousness to me never dies. It's an energetic situation where when our spirit leaves our body, our consciousness goes with it. So when I heard of people who were in heaven, just like Tommy, and I was prepped for Tommy. It wasn't like Tommy appeared in my life and said, "I went to heaven and this is what happened to me." I was prepped by others who told me the same story. So with people in heaven, they're very conscious. They know what's going on. They're talking through their brains. And I've never been there. But I've heard enough stories where their consciousness lives on. And then Tommy and I happened to meet Dr. Von Pimmel, a Dutch cardiologist who lectured at a conference in Montreal on life after death. And actually, his research, Eva, was published in The Lancet, in the British Medical Journal years ago, where he interviewed 344 survivors of sudden death, and 20% of them went to the other side and came back, and their stories are very similar. And in his book, he makes it very, very clear that through his interviews about consciousness, our soul consciousness transgresses time. In other words, it never ends. We lose the physical body, but our spirit, our consciousness moves on. So, I mean, for me, that was my trinity. It was the physical body, the emotional body, and the spiritual body. And then after meeting Tommy, I realized that my whole life has been programmed by the divine. And I really believe that. I can look back on my whole life and know, yeah, that even when I grew up with a very, very sick mother, it was her plight, her condition that really unconsciously made me become a physician. So everything in life is connected. We are all connected to other people, events. Nothing happens by chance. And when Tommy walked into my life, he really did an amazing healing of my psyche as well. So I just feel blessed that Tommy and I were destined to meet. And the last thing that really caused me to meet Tommy was I had a hip replacement, And the hip replacement, I had some problems with it, and I was at a lecture with Tommy, and that's how I met him. And it was Tommy that told me I had I was feeling pain in my hip, and I had an infection in my hip. And I asked Tommy, I says, "How could you possibly know that?" He says, "Spirit told me." And I said, "Well, it was a good thing that I was prepped many times, but because you know I would have, because after hearing that from somebody, a perfect stranger saying that Spirit told me that you had, you know, inflammation in your hip, it's just amazing." So, you know, that's sort of my story. And to summarize, I became a physical doctor, but it's not, doctoring is not, or healing is not about just the physical body. It's about the emotional and spiritual. And Tommy was placed in my path to fulfill that trinity. So that's my trinity.
So I have I'm going to give you guys a couple of things that I'm curious about, and then I'm going to let you, I don't want to have to stop and start and interrupt you. So I'll just tell you all of them, then you can talk about them. To Tommy, I want to know, did it hurt? To Steve, I want to know, since you've seen many, many people die and come back, do you think that your religious beliefs matter? I mean, what if you're a devout, fundamental person and you think whatever it is they think, or what if you don't have any beliefs? From what you've told, are you going to be okay regardless?
Sure, I can answer that. And actually, Tommy, you could answer that one, too. I would tell him about Uncle Hugh's funeral and how he ended up talking to Uncle Hugh going to the other side. Remember, he was disappointed. Yeah, why don't you handle that, Tommy? Tommy and I both grew up Catholic. We both wanted to become priests when we were young boys, believe it or not. You know, it's in the book. But Jan's, my wife's uncle, was a devout Catholic. And this is kind of interesting. He was just a wonderful human being. He would visit the sick. He would give communion to the sick. He would go to the prisons. He would talk to convicted felons. He was really a special kind of person. And he ended up getting an infection in a prosthetic knee and staph coagulase positive, and he died in the hospital. And then Tommy happened to be visiting the Northeast when he was in the hospital, and he did pass over. And then we're sitting at the wake, and go ahead, Tommy, I'll hand it over to you, what happened after that.
Now, at the wake, I've got his voice in my head telling me what was going on and how beautiful heaven was, and it was so nice to hear that confirmation that he was already there and he was at peace already. But to get back to what religion is there in heaven, I really believe it's what you believe in and who you're going to see. Like, I believe in Jesus, and I saw Jesus. And if you believe in Buddha, you'll see Buddha. If you believe in Moses, you'll see Moses. And all religions are all here so people have different ways to believe. It'd be very boring if we all had one religion and we all had one way to think about how God was.
It would also take away the free will factor, too. But I remember Tommy telling me that when he was a devout Catholic, that when he went to heaven, he thought a lot of it wasn't Catholic. he was a little bit disappointed.
A little secret I have here, it's not in the book, but Jesus did tell me that Catholic religion was nothing the way he wanted it to be. It was supposed to be more like the Kabbalah, a branch off of Judaism, being spiritual, and the powers to be changed over the years, because they didn't want to be close to Judaism. And that was really interesting because when he was around and he was walking on earth, he gave Mary Magdalene the same powers he had. And for a woman to have power in a Jewish religion was unheard of. And the apostles weren't too happy about that. But the reason why he gave the energy to Mary was we needed female energy to balance the yin and yang of the planet. All the male energy is not good. So that's why he balanced it with the female energy.
Well, I'm Jewish. And one time I asked my rabbi about, I grew up Southern Baptist, and then I converted to conservative Jew. Now I'm nothing, just spiritual. But my rabbi told me one time, Eva, when I was talking to him about spirituality and consciousness and the power of intention and psychic abilities and healing abilities, he said, all of this was in the Talmud at one time, but but the rabbis took it out because it was so powerful, and people learned that they could use it to hurt other people to get their way. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing to know that an Orthodox rabbi told me that.
Wow. They're probably just scared of people that could do it, and that's why they want to get rid of it.
Yeah. So did it hurt, Tommy? People fear dying because they think it's going to hurt.
It doesn't hurt at all.
When the car hit you, what did you feel?
I don't remember getting hit by the car at all, or even a month or two before the accident. All I remember is all of a sudden I'm in this tunnel of light. Don't remember seeing the car coming. Don't remember getting hit. And I asked God about that, and he says, a lot of people die, like people who died in the World Trade Center when they jumped out,
mm-hmm.
they didn't feel anything.
I've always wondered.
God took their soul out of their body as soon as they jumped, so they wouldn't feel anything.
That's good to know.
And that was the reason, because he didn't want us to have that impact of that feeling of that death. So if a person's shot, you don't usually feel it either, because he gets you out of the body before it is. Remember, everything happens on the divine side first. This is just a dream. This is just not reality. The reality is over there. So it has to happen there first. If God wants it to happen, if there's a lesson that we're supposed to learn, it happens from that side, and then we feel it on this side. There was one section in the book, 1990, on Halloween, which is coming up. I don't like Halloween because I almost died that day. I had a plumbing business, and I had payroll, and three guys came in to rob me. And they threw me on the floor, tied me up, and they went and put the gun behind my head and pulled the trigger 6-7 times and then cursed and ran out. And tell you the truth, I thought I was dead there, and I wasn't. And I got up, and I said, I could not believe the gun didn't go off. And when I get to heaven, my teacher tells me, remember the time that you were tied up and almost killed? I said, sure I do. He says, well, you weren't supposed to die that day. And the angel stopped you. Your guardian angel stopped you. So in the book, there's a whole thing about guardian angels. And I asked a question about how come I always lose my keys when I need to go someplace. He says that is because you need to slow down, and you're not supposed to be at that place at that time to avoid accidents or to make your day go much more smoother. So we have constant guidance throughout our day that we don't realize it. Our guardian angels are always there watching us. And that's what I loved about that.
You're not going to ask this question. Two questions. First one is, either one of you guys, what do you think about free will? Do we have it or not? Are we driving the car or not? And number two, and I don't know how to ask the question, so I'm going to tell you a statement. I've had lots of dark nights in my soul, in my life. Dark nights of the soul in my life, and I've talked about this stuff for over a decade, you know, believe, intend, pray, you know, trust, but I didn't really get it until last year when I was sitting on my porch, and I suddenly had an idea is the best way I can describe it. We wouldn't have signed up to play a game if we didn't ultimately have the desire to win that game. So just say, okay, so do you believe that if when really bad things are happening, if you just sit there and you don't go down the rabbit hole and focus on it, will it pass you by, or do you have to experience bad stuff too?
Well, it can pass you by, because if you have enough faith, then you could overcome it. Now, what puts us into those positions sometimes is that we have fear, and fear is lack of faith. And in the book there, faithfulness is one of the revelations. And when you have fear, there's no faith. So what the faith does, it conquers everything. You have no fear about if you're going to die, if you're going to be run over, if you're going to be robbed, whatever it might be arrested, whatever it might be. Because there's so many ways to be fearful about things. Just relax and say to yourself, I got to do this every day. I know God is in control of everything, and I'm here to fulfill my promise to him to work for him. That's what I do every day. And that's such a great feeling.
What about the free will?
Oh, there's free will. Mm-hmm. And the reason why God doesn't mess with it is because, well, here's a great example. When I was in heaven, he told me that there's 3 or 4 soulmates you get when you write in your scroll. We write down what's going to happen in our lives. We write down if we're going to get cancer, get heart disease, or be run over, or be electrocuted, whatever it might be, hit by lightning. We write that on our scroll because what that does is it helps reduce our karma. And what's happening now is that we're getting towards end times, and there's not going to be much reincarnation come back, like maybe 1 or 2 times. And like human nature, no one wanted to experience the karma, so they weren't writing it in. So now, that's why you see a lot of illness now, and a lot of death, and problems, because everyone has to catch up with the karma. And that's why there's a lot of cancer, a lot of wars and fighting and killing.
So
that's what.
Do you mean that? Are you saying that we only have 1 or 2 more reincarnations for this physical reality? Is that what you're saying? What do you mean by
well,
that?
I was told by Jesus. I didn't write this in the book because, you know, I want to keep it clean about health and stuff. But what's going to happen is the vibration of the planet is changing. So it's going to become higher and higher. And then eventually, in another 60, 70 years, this is going to turn to heaven. And your consciousness here will be light. There'll be no more darkness. That's what's happening.
I understand that.
It's so, not going to come and blow everything up. Like some people think.
Steve, what do you have to say as a learned professional for other learned professionals who argue that consciousness is a brain activity and not really these near-death experiences aren't really happening?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about that myself. I mean, you know, being trained in science and thinking about, when people die, they have anoxia, meaning a lack of oxygen to the brain. So could they be hallucinating, and could that be a factor? Or, when people are on morphine drips, could analgesics change the chemistry of the body where you're seeing things that haven't really been manifested? I've had conversations with other doctors and agnostics and atheists about that, and so, you know, it's like politics, and sometimes these conversations get charged. But I've just heard this story so many times with different, twists and ramifications that I believe, as an invasive cardiologist, that were placed in my path. So when I met a person like Tommy, who had a very, very prolonged NDE, and the thing about Tommy was, he was on a ventilator in the intensive care unit for weeks, and he went through terrible pain when he came back to his physical body. And the NDEs that I saw were people that I successfully resuscitated. And I even had one fellow, I'll never forget him. He came into my office and he was very upset with me for saving his life. He said to me, I was in the most beautiful place I've ever been. It was pure, unconditional love. I was feeling the greatest I've ever had been in my entire life, and you pulled me out of it. I hate you. And it was real. So, I mean, I just feel that consciousness never, never leaves. It's it is something that is hard to explain in human terms, but not in divine terms. And it's something that I've seen at the bedside. And the way to explain this, and this is one of the reasons why God sent Tommy to me. Because of the nature of my work, being an invasive cardiologist and literally at resuscitations, and I mean hundreds and hundreds. I mean, as a cardiology fellow, I was always on call for, cardiac arrest in the hospital. And I can remember being at the bedside of many dying people in their last moments. And a lot of people were very comforted. In other words, they had smiles on their face, and other people were terrified. And I remember reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and Tommy and I have also heard lectures on this. And actually, the 8th century author said that the greatest moment we have on earth, and we wrote this in a book, by the way, the greatest moment we have on earth is the moment we die, when our vibration goes into the light body and we go through a white light experience. This is what the author wrote in the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And when I was at the bedside of dying people, I just felt that some of these deaths, these people were joyful or just before it happened, and others were very, very afraid. And that was a big confusion for me, because I always thought about, what's my own death going to be like? I often thought about it. And to be honest with you, I had a fear of it. And then after meeting Tommy, and I realized that that fear is taken away now, because after meeting Tommy, I just realized we're all going to a better place. I mean, that's inculcated into my brain. And I just feel that, Tommy was a gift to me. And I was placed in his path for a reason, for healing, and he was placed in my path to get me over my fear of death and dying. So, and again, that's the way God works. He puts people in your path to either dispel a myth or to strengthen a belief system. And I've been blessed with my meeting of Tommy.
So, Tommy, how did you feel about death before this happened? How did it change what you thought about it?
I really didn't give it much thinking, to tell you the truth. You know, I was in my 30s. You didn't figure out about dying in your 30s usually too much. Just kept going and not worried about it too much. And when it happened to me, I was like in shock that I actually said I had a near-death experience. I actually died. I mean, come on, this is going to happen to me. And for years, I didn't talk about it because I thought people think I was crazy. When I woke up out of my coma, the doctor said to me, I'm not going to walk. And I said, I'll walk out of here. He says, what makes you think that? I said, I just know. And it took me a couple of years to really walk, but I crawled out holding against the walls with a walker, but I wasn't going to get into that wheelchair for sure. And I realized if I had told him I went to heaven, he would have put me in the psych ward for medications.
Now, how long were you in a coma?
About 26 days, 27
so,
days.
Do you have any idea how much of that time that you were having an experience? You know, and I don't know if this makes sense. Maybe you can help me, Steve, if I need help. You know, the movie plays in an instant. You know, the movie can be like a painting says a million words, whereas the mm-hmm. sentences, if you talk them, can take hours. How much of that 26 days or whatever you said do you think was the experience? And how much? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting
yeah.
question. Because 1 minute in heaven equals 20 years here. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I mean,
because there was
I
no time
it.
There. Mm-hmm. So I know I wasn't in my body during that time because I wasn't experiencing any pain. So.
Did any EKGs
believe,
or anything change at all, or any organ functions? Did you see anything? Have you looked at his records, Steve, or not?
What do you mean, Eva? Just explain the nature of the question. Yeah.
I just wonder, while he was experiencing or while he was being void, did any physiological changes happen in the numbers? In his vital signs, or whatever.
I really don't know, but I do know that I had to be shocked back to life a couple of times.
So I wonder what was happening when you got shocked. If you were experiencing bliss, or I don't know. I'm just curious about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
What
well,
can
I mean,
you tell us?
Because I wasn't in the body.
So
I mean, even I've seen. You know, it's amazing, but. I've seen very, very sick people who had out-of-body experiences where they literally went to the other side, they may have not met a spiritual teacher. They may have seen their spirit guides or angelic beings, but they didn't die. But they were very, very sick where they had an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. Even happened to my own son. But I've seen in people that I've been at resuscitations and people that woke up and related their stories to me. Most of these people were out for like minutes. It wasn't like Tommy's situation where Tommy was so, you know, violated physically from being run over that, you know, being on a ventilator for weeks and then, you know, in other words, Tommy is probably the longest NDE in earthly terms that I've ever met. That the people that told me their stories, it was during the resuscitations, during surgery, during cardiac catheterizations, where we'd have a complication where blood pressure would be lost, and they would go and they would come back. So, from my experience, I saw quick NDEs, but these people would tell me these stories that some were similar to Tommy, some weren't. I had a couple of two negative NDEs. And if you talk to Ray Moody and some of the other authors that have interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people, usually about 98% of NDEs have a very, very beautiful, indescribable experience. In fact, Tommy mentions that in the book, and Ray Moody lectures about this all the time, is that you can't put the experience in words. It's almost impossible. But again, I had two cases where it was an unpleasant experience. So
does it, either one of you, well, both of you actually, because it'd be a different perspective probably from both, did it change your perspective about what should happen to people who have comas? What if they had disconnected him? You know, I guess people that have comas, they can come back.
Oh yeah, they can.
They
absolutely.
Be given more time. I mean, how do physicians get their head around what to do about that?
Yeah, Tommy, let me just go quick, because I'll be brief. When a person's in a coma, most of the comas I saw were from cardiac arrests, where it was a prolonged cardiac arrest, and the person woke up the next day, where the brain didn't get oxygen, and The point here is that whenever anybody's in a coma, first of all, the last sense to go is hearing. I've had people tell me that when doctors came to the bedside or nurses and they were talking about the case, they could hear almost every word, despite the fact that they're in a coma and they're unconscious. Even though they can't see, they can't talk, hearing lots of times is preserved. In fact, I remember one patient telling me that she was really upset because somebody was talking about organ transplantation.
Oh, wow.
And they were talking about her. So, like, for your listeners out there, first of all, when somebody's in a coma, it's not over. A coma can be like a deep sleep. It's really important that family members don't talk about negative things because it's just amazing that some of these people can hear you. So it's just important that you give respect to our senses, because again, if you are sort of out of body or you are in this state where the physical signs of the body are deteriorating, the body is still in that spiritual state, and that vibration is higher. So on earthly terms, we can't explain it, but basically a coma can be a sign of the person having gone to the other side or having out of body or just being in a coma. I really believe this, Eva, especially with older people, people in nursing homes where they sleep a lot. I think when people sleep a lot, they're almost planning to go to the other side, and it's almost a transition. because sleep, deep sleep, is like maybe one-tenth of a coma, something like that. But Tommy has been in a coma, so maybe Tommy can tell you his experience.
Well, when I've seen in a case, J.J. Virgin's son was ran over by a car at 40 miles an hour, and Steve had her call me when it happened. And her first question, do you think he's going to die? And I asked God and meditated on it, and I said, no, she's not going to die. And he says, what makes you think that? I says, because his aorta was ruptured, and he lasted an hour and a half and didn't die. Now, Steve, what happens when an aorta ruptures?
Oh, you're
dead.
You don't
have more than 15 minutes, usually, right?
You bleed out in less than that, Tommy. You bleed out very quickly.
That's a good point, Tommy. Really?
So, when she said it to me, he says, if your son was supposed to die, he'd be dead already. And she says, how can you be so sure? I says, I'm 100% sure he's not going anywhere. So what happens is 23, 24 days, he's in a coma. And I'm talking to her every day, and I'm saying, this is all part of his healing. Don't worry about it. The doctors are telling me he might not wake up now in 21 days because he was hit. You know, he's a 150-pound kid that ran over 40 miles an hour, so he had no cushion. I had some cushion on my body to help protect some stuff. And he had a broken leg, a broken arm, and on the 21st day, they finally operate on his arm. They put a pin in and put his leg pin back into. And she calls me hysterically crying and says, they tell me he might not wake up. I said, let's just say a prayer together. Her husband was at the hospital. I said, put your hand on his forehead, hold his hand, and let's all three of us say a prayer that he wakes up. And in 5 minutes, he woke up.
Oh, wow.
He wakes up, and he takes his right arm, and he lifts it all the way up and stops it above his head. He lowers it back down controlled, and he takes his leg, which has a pin in it that day too, all the way up, 45-degree angle, and brings it back down and controlled it and closes his eye. I says, be so happy. He's fine. He just needs to rest. And what comas are is where the body shuts down and says, I can't take it anymore. I got to rest. And that's what happens.
That's amazing.
And that's why you can't disconnect the plug.
So I just want to say this. I know, Tommy, that you do healings because you've done many on me, and they're phenomenal. I don't know if that's something you want to tell people that you do, but we have about 8 minutes left, and you guys can have that to talk about whatever you want to talk about that you want the audience to hear.
Well, I think the best thing is about how we really met, Steve and I, because it's an amazing story how we're all connected. And I was sick with my heart problem. And, you know, when I got ran over, I had a lot of shock to the heart. I was dead for 3 minutes. And they had told me that my heart was very weak and I might need a transplant someday. And 10 years later, I was not really taking care of myself and I was staying up late and I don't drink, smoke, or do any drugs, but I was overeating. And my heart gave out again. And then a friend of mine in Florida says, you have to get this book. I said, what's the name of it? She says, Metabolic Cardiology by Dr. Steven Sinatra. He's in Connecticut by me. So I call up his office, and I get that he has no appointments for 2 years. So I said,
I didn't know that,
well,
Tommy. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I get this. I said, well, I guess I'm not supposed to see him, so let me read the book. I read the book, and every protocol in that book, I went out and did faithfully every day for a year. And then what happens is there's a conference going to be held in St. Petersburg. And my wife says, you know, Tommy, you should go there because I heard Dr. Sinatra is going to be there. I said, I'm still not feeling 100% yet. I really don't want to drive 3 hours and drive 3 hours back. And maybe I shouldn't go. And then like a week after, I said, I get a message in my head, you have to go. I said, okay, I have to go now. Let's get ready. So the day we're leaving, I'm in the car ready to go. My wife still hasn't left the house. I said, my name's Michelle. I said, Michelle, where aren't you here? She says, I have to go back and get something. I said, what do you have to get? She says, I'm told to pick up serapeptase. I says, don't worry about it. I'm not using it right now. I have it on. I take supplements, some of them, a week on, a week off. Because sometimes you get so used to it, your body doesn't remember it anymore. So that's why I do that. So I said, I don't need it. She says, I need it. I have to get it. So she goes and takes it. And then after the lecture, I go up to my room, and my wife says to me, you have to go downstairs now. I says, why? She says, Dr. Sinatra's in the lobby. I says, well, he has a sermon, the lecture hall. He's in the lobby. Let's go. Now, she's also intuitive, too. So we go down the elevator, and there's Dr. Sinatra with a couple hundred people around him, and he's talking, and all of a sudden, he screams out, does anyone have any Serenpeptase? And my wife says, I have it. No one else had it, and the whole of people, but we did.
Not even the Avengers had any. Not even the Avengers.
Let's make a deal, Monty
right,
Hall.
So Steve says to me, how come you have this Serenpeptase? I said, well, I died, went to heaven, and I do some spiritual healing, and I was told that I should use it, and that's why I did it. He says, come on, he says to me. I said, and by the way, the hip in your pain is really bad, and you have staph in that hip. And he looks at me and goes, how'd you know that? I said, Spirit told me. And that was like the opening of the connection. The next day he says to me, I'm going down Florida. I'm going to come by and see you. So he had a fellow that was working with him, and he had a limp in his foot. And I says to him, I said, Chris, you worked in a place with a lot of metals. And
he actually had MS. He was diagnosed with MS. But
yeah,
go ahead.
He had MS in the leg. And I said, well, tomorrow you'll be able to walk on it. And he says, what do you mean? I says, it's metal, and I'll ask God to remove it and get rid of it. So the next day he walked a mile. But he couldn't understand how I knew he worked in a metal factory, because no one knew. And that was my connection to Dr. Sinatra. And he was put in my life to help my heart, and I was put in his life to help his fear of death. So that's how the connection started. And then it was so nice that our wives really love each other too, and it was a perfect combination of the two families.
Well, I'm the lucky one. I have you both here, and I didn't have any of those things.
and then, Tommy, we should tell a story where you went to a couple cardiologists, and they all said you needed a heart transplantation. And Tommy's heart, he has a pacemaker, defibrillator. I mean, he's like, you know, he's got a lot of gadgets in his heart. But I remember taking his pulse, and he was in atrial fibrillation, and he was taking all these drugs. And I asked him, why are you taking these drugs if you have this heart rate? And then I ended up getting involved. And I had him come up to my clinic in my office, and I'm with the echo technician, and we're doing the echo on your heart myself, right,
right.
Tommy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I took the probe myself, and I'm looking at your heart. And basically, you know, with just an adjustment in his metabolic cardiology and pulling away one drug and substituting something else, Tommy's ejection fraction, what were you, low 20s, Tommy? And now you're like high 30s, low 40s.
I was 15.
Yeah. And right now you're just only a few points below normal. I mean, Tommy's in great shape. I mean, so that's how we started the conversation tonight, that people are placing your path for a reason. Tommy can't heal himself. Spiritual healers can't heal themselves. So other people need to be placed in their path. And then Tommy was placed in my path again to get over my fears. And I really think God is reaching out to me. So he put Tommy in my path as a person, as an earthly being, to show that the divine exists and is very alive in our lives. So. Again, I'm blessed that I'm the co-author of this book. I mean, I feel like the author also ran in this book because Tommy's story is so riveting that even when I read the book now, I can't put it down.
So tell us where one more time the website and where people can find it.
It's on Amazon.com, and it's under Health Revelations from Heaven and Earth. If you put in Dr. Stephen Sinatra or Tommy Rosa, it'll come up, too. I don't remember the name. And it's on Barnes & Noble, too. And it's going to be in the bookstores, too.
Do you do healing, Tommy? Do you do that for people? Can people make appointments with you?
No, I don't do it anymore. What I just do now is people have fear of death and lose people. I go over with them and get their fear away and try and consult them. That's what I do.
Consult them,
not to have fear.
What about you,
the healing
Steve?
Takes a lot of energy out of me, and I don't want to do it anymore.
I understand that. What about you, Steve?
No, I mean, when my son was real sick, I sort of retired from, you know, the day-to-day office of medicine. And I still take care of a few people in my practice, you know, people with congenital, you know, who have severe congenital heart disease, who refused heart transplant and stuff like that. And so as a way of formally seeing patients, no, I don't do that. And basically, I see myself right now more of as of a teacher, trying to get people to actually prevent illness, because prevention is much easier than cure. It's much easier. So I really believe that one of the reasons why Tommy and I got together in this book was to show people they can be so instrumental in their own healing. People are powerful. They have to understand that. They're so powerful, and they can heal themselves.
If someone already, and we only have a couple of minutes here, just want to touch on this. It's not just prevention, right? If somebody already has it, they can back it up.
Oh, of course.
It's possible.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. I mean, you can have devastating illness. I mean, whether it's, you know, heart disease, cancer, you know, neurodegenerative disease. You can have devastating illness. And the most important thing in any illness, and we talk about this in the book, and I was delighted that Tommy heard this, you know, from the Ascended Masters, is basically positive intention. Positive intention is so important. So if you believe that you can get well.
We got 20 seconds.
If you believe you can get well, that's half the battle. You have to believe you can get well, even against the greatest odds. Remember this, Eva, and I'll quote Bernie Siegel on this. There's always hope and a prayer. Always hope and a prayer.
Thank you, guys. You guys are fabulous. I'm so honored and grateful to be able to expose your book to the world. Thank you for everything that you've both done for me. And may God go with you on this new journey.
Thanks so much,
Good night.
Eva.
Good night.
And bless everyone for listening.
All right, bye-bye now.